You're learning Masechet Sanhedrin. We're on Daf Yud Tet Amud Bet 19b, 19b1, first column. Lo chaletz v'lo chotzen. So our Mishnah said that the king does not perform chalitza, and chalitza is not performed on his wife, right? So he doesn't do chalitza. Why not? So we said the reason why he doesn't do chalitza is that it's not kavod for a king to be spat at. But there was an opinion of, let's have a look. Lo chaletz v'lo chotzen l'ishto. Rabbi Yehuda omer im asa lachlot kol yevamen zachulato. Rabbi Yehuda says he can. Rabbi Yehuda says if he wants to perform chalitza, then he can. So why does Rabbi Yehuda let the king perform chalitza? That's the question the Gemara is looking at now. Amy, is it so? Is it true that we allow the king to perform chalitza like Rabbi Yehuda says? Amar Rav Ashi, because we learn that Rav Ashi said, "Afilu lema'an da'amar nasi shemachal al kavodo, kavodo machol." Even according to the one who says that are nasty. Nasi, the
head of
the Sanhedrin, right? Head of the Sanhedrin. If he wants to machala kovodor, if he wants to renounce his honor, kovodor machol, he's allowed to do so. Do you? You learning with us this morning?
Yeah.
Ah, okay, great. So you were. So Rav Ashi says, a king Rav Ashi says, a nasi that wants to renounce his own honor, we let him, even though he's head of the Sanhedrin, we let him. Melech shemachal al kavodo en kavodo machol. But a king that wants to renounce his honor, we don't let him. His honor is not waived. Why not? Shenemar, because we're in a pasuk from Dvarim, which says, "Som tasim alecha melech." You should appoint upon yourself a king. What does that mean? Gemara explained, "Shetehei emato alecha," that the fear, the awe of the king shall be upon you. Right? When it says "tosim alecha," upon you, a king, it means that the king needs to be above you. And if he renounces his honor, then you're going against the Torah. So it's not in the king's. King can't personally decide to renounce his own honor because it's not in his hands. It's a Torah law that the king, the person has to fear the king. You can't go against what Hashem wanted. So according to that. Understanding, Rabbi Yehuda has a difficulty because Rabbi Yehuda said that a king is allowed to perform chalitza. Good morning, Rabbi Eliezer. Mm-hmm. So how can a king perform chalitza when they spit in your face or they spit on the ground, the woman spits on the ground, if the king's not allowed to renounce his own honor? He's not allowed to. Rabbi Yehuda says he can if he wants, but we just brought a proof that we see from the Torah that a king's not allowed to. So how is it that Rabbi Yehuda can say that we do allow him to do chalitza if he wants to? Gemara answers, mitzvah shani. For a mitzvah it's different. You're right. Most cases, king's not allowed to renounce his honor. He has to keep his own honor, but for the sake of a mitzvah, then he is. Okay. Next piece of the Gemara brings the Mishnah. Ein nosin yotet amud bet 19b1, second column. The ein nosin, the king may not marry. Who may not he marry? Let's look back in the Mishnah. The Mishnah will tell us who he's not allowed to marry. Look, ein nosin almana. Yes, ein nosin almanato. One may not marry the king's widow. Rabbi Huda Omer, Rabbi Huda says no. Noseh hamelech amanato shel melech. A king may marry a king's widow. Why? Because he brings the case of David. Shekem matzinu b'David. Shenasa amanato shel Shaul. Because David married the widow of Shaul. So that's what the Mishnah said. Let's see what the Gemara's got to say about it. Tanya, it was taught in a Braita. Amula la Rav Yehuda. They said to Rav Yehuda. They said to Rav Yehuda, Nashim haruyot lo mi beit hamelech. Women that were suitable for him from the house of the king. What's it going on? It says when the passage that we gave in the Mishnah says that a king is allowed to marry the widows of another king. And we learn that from David and Shaul, because the pasuk says, "Va'aten lach l'chach et beit adonecha, yet nashei adonecha b'chikecha." I gave you the house of your master and the women of your master. Hashem is saying to David HaMelech, "I gave you the house of your master. I gave you the palace. I gave you the kingship of your master Shaul, and I also gave you his women." So the Mishnah wants to learn out from there that you see that David married the women, the wives of Shaul. But the Gemara wants to say maybe not. Gemara here has a brighter, different understanding. It says, what does it mean when he married the women of the house? It means Nashim haru wu'uyot bibeit hamelech, women who were suitable for him from the house of the king. Reminding who, and who were they? Merab and Michal. Merab and Michal were the daughters of Shaul. And that's who David married. He didn't marry, according to this understanding, he didn't marry the wives of Shaul. He married the daughters of Shaul. So when the pasuk in Shmuel says that he married the women of his master, didn't mean his wives, it meant his children. Merab and Michal. But you should be scratching your head right now, saying, wait a minute, that can't be right. How can he marry Merav and Michal? Gemara now says, Sha'alu Tamidav et Rav Yossi. The students asked Rav Yossi, Hayech Nasa David Shei Achayot B'chayechen. How can it be? They were sisters. How can it be that David married two sisters in their lifetime? You're not allowed to marry two sisters. Prohibition. Don't try this at home. You're not allowed to do it. You're not allowed to marry two. So how could David marry Merav and Michal? So let's see. So we have two answers. First answer, Amalahem, Rav Yossi answers back to them, Michal achal mitat Merav nasa. That David married Michal only after the death of Merav. So that's one answer. That's allowed. You are allowed to marry two sisters after one of them dies. But during the lifetime of one eunuch. Even if you got divorced, you're not allowed to marry the other if the first one's still alive. If she dies, then it's permitted. So with David HaMelech, when it says that he married Merab and Michal, maybe that's what it meant, according to Rabbi Yossi. That's how it happened. But we have a different opinion as well. Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha says like this. Kiddushei ta'ut hayu lo b'meirav. It was a kiddushei ta'ut, a mistaken kiddushin, mistaken marriage. Hayalo l'meirav. He had two meirav. Right? When it says that he married meirav, according to what we're going to learn now, from Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, it wasn't a true marriage. Although the pasuk says he married Merab and Michal, he actually didn't really marry Merab. It was a mistaken marriage. It looked like he got married to her, but it wasn't a real marriage, so it didn't count. It wasn't a true marriage. There was a problem with the marriage, you're going to see. There was a problem with that it wasn't effective. So he never actually married her. So let's see as follows. Shinema, like it says. So it says a pasuk in Shmuel, which says like this. Tana et ishti, and Michal, Asher erasti li b'mea arlot plishtim. Give me my wife Michal, which I married or I erasti, I engaged for, I right, got engaged with, 100 foreskins of plishtim, of Palestinians, of Philistines.
Invaders.
Yeah, Tom.
Call them as they are, invaders.
Cousins, well, wherever they are. Of Palestine.
That right? Sounds like a wonderful idea. Just castrate them all. I mean, it's easier to carry than heads.
Yeah, I think you kill them first, but I think you kill them and then just save the. Anyway, that's what happened there. So that we're going to see later on. It explains a little bit later, but in order to marry Michal, King Shaul, his daughter, said, bring me 100 foreskins of Philistines, right? He was putting them off. He didn't really want him to marry his daughter because he saw that he was about to lose his kingship because this guy's about to take over. And if he gives him his daughter, he's just got legitimacy and he's just, right? He's going to, so, Tom, you know what?
I mean,
and he was still a small kid. David was, little David with the slingshot.
Is that a valid payment?
So David said, fine, yeah. So that's what the Gemara's going to, question whether or not 100 foreskins is a valid payment for marriage.
I mean, is that, we're equivalent to 2 zoos?
Well, it has to be a purchase worth. Right, we're going to see that that's going to be one of the conclusions of the Gemara in a minute as to whether or not that was valuable consideration. But the general story, that's what happened. If you want to do this for me, it doesn't say that that's the marriage contract in the Shmuel. It just says, fulfill this task and I will give you my daughter's hand in marriage. Tov, so this initially is the proof that he didn't marry Merab, he only married Michal. How? Because Rashi says, from here, Rashi says, where is it gone? Haitana et ishti and Michal. Tov, it's about 20 lines down in Rashi, just where it says Gileayon Hashas. If you go across from there. So it said, "Demash mezu ishti v'lo meirav ishti." Implicit from here is the fact that Michal is my wife, and Meirav is not my wife. He says, "Give me my wife, Michal." So Rashi wants to learn out because he said, "Give me my wife, Michal." You can learn out at least initially. It's not complete proof, but you can learn out from here some evidence that Meirav wasn't his wife. And only Michal was his wife, because he called Michal his wife, and he didn't call Merab his wife. But that's only the beginning of the proof. Gemara says, "My Talmuda, what's the learning? What's the learning over here?" Amara Papa, our Papa says, "Michal ishti." So he says it now. It's interesting why Rashi brings it if the Gemara brings it straight away afterwards. Amara Papa, our Papa says, "Michal ishti, v'lo Merab ishti." We learn from here that Michal is my wife and Merab is not my wife. We're going to explain why that is the case. And what is my Kiddushei Ta'ut? Right? We said at the beginning that Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha said it was a Kiddushei Ta'ut. It was a mistaken marriage to Meirav, and that's why she was never really his wife. Only Michal was a true wife, but Meirav wasn't. How was it? What was the mistake? So we're going to learn that now. Dichtiv, it's written, Vaya ha'ish asher yikanu yesrenu ha'melech osher gadol. Right? It's written in Shmuel. Let's get the full pasuk. Give me the rest of it. Tov. Gimel. If you look in the Torah or Hashalem, right, the full pasuk in Shmuel says like this: Vayomer ish Yisrael, ha'ra'item ha'ish ha'oleh hazeh. Ki lecharef et Yisrael ole. Have you seen this man, this evil man who stands up to embarrass Am Yisrael? Vayaish, and if it will be a person, Asher Yikanu v'yesrenu Hamelech, who will kill him? Yashrenu Hamelech, the king will give him riches, a lot of riches. Ve'et bito. And his daughter Yiten Lo, he'll give him. So this is where Shaul says, if anyone kills Goliath, I'll give him a lot of wealth and my daughter. Right? So that's what he says. Okay, so what happened? So as we know, David killed him. Okay. Goliath. Azal Katle. He went and he killed him. Amarlo, he said to him, Milve it lach gabai. So Shaul is now talking to David. He says to him, Milve it lach gabai, you have a debt to collect from me. Right? Shaul promised great wealth to whoever killed Goliath. But the one who marries on a debt is not married. What does that mean? The one who marries on a debt is not married. So there are different ways of getting married. One of them is by giving value. You have to give at least a pruta's worth, small coin. If you want to get married, small coin's worth. Question is, so let's just, before we get to that question, if you want to get married, there's two ways of getting married. If the woman is of age, then you give her the money, you give her the ring, you give her the value, and you can be married in exchange for that. If she's not yet of age, you can give it to her father, give the money to her father. And you can acquire your wife that way. Now, if you can give money to the father, let's say the father owes you some money. In exchange for that debt that he owes you, can you get married? Can you say, you know what, don't pay me back the $10 I owe you. I'll use that to marry your daughter. Can you do that? What do you think?
Well, he said he was going to give his daughter.
I know he said it, but the actual acquisition still has to be a valid Torah acquisition. So even though he said you can marry my daughter, unless he actually affects a valid kiddushin, then it doesn't matter what he said. So the question now is, you're allowed to marry Gedaliah if you wanted to marry your wife and she was underage. Right? So you could give the father, your father-in-law, $10, and that will be enough to marry, to affect valid kiddushin. Now let's say your father-in-law to be, wasn't your father-in-law yet, your father-in-law owed you $10. Can you say to him, in exchange for that $10 you owe me, instead of me giving you $10, just waive that, and I'll use that as the acquiring money. Can you do that?
Sounds good.
Sounds possible. So the Torah here says no. This is a mistake that King David made. David, Shaul promised him a lot of great wealth. And you might have thought that in exchange for not giving, he never gave him the money, as far as we know. Right? He never gave him the money. But in exchange for that, that he used it as an acquiring fee of his daughter, Merab. But it didn't work. Because Shaul said to him, Hamakadesh b'milveh eino mekudeshet. Right? Shaul, they were discussing Gemara, right? They were discussing halacha. Shaul said to him, the one who gets married mekudeshet on a loan, or meaning the cancellation of a debt, eino mekudeshet, doesn't hold. Azal yahava l'Adriel. So he went and gave her, meaning Merab, to Adriel instead, as a wife. Like it says in the pasuk in Shmuel, "Vayhi beit tet et Merab bat Shaul le David." What's the rest of that? But Shaul le David, "Vayhi nitna la Adriel hamochalti leisha." Right. So it came to pass when Merab, the daughter of Shaul, should have been given to David, she was given instead to Adriel. So we see from here that he never really married Merab, so it wasn't a problem. That was the ta'ut. That was a mistake. It looked like he married her, but he didn't. That's why she was given to Adriel instead. Because the money which King Shaul promised wasn't good payment for the wife. Amale, he said to him, right, this is the Shaul talking to David. Iba'it de'eten lach Michal. If you want me to give you Michal, my second daughter instead, zil ateli mea aralot plishtim. Go and get for me 100 foreskins of Philistines. Azal, aitile, he went and he got them. Amale, he didn't kill them, he just went to the local Mohel of Palestinians and said, give me your last 100. No, he didn't. He went and killed them. Right? Amale, he said to him, Shaul said to David, Milva uputa itlach gabai. Right? We've got a milva, we've got a loan that he hasn't still paid him, the money, the wealth that he promised him, and now we've got the foreskins as well. So we've got the money and the loan of, meaning the debt, plus the foreskins. Is that good enough? So Shaul says, Milva upruta it lach gabai. A loan and a pruta you've given to me. Shaul sava milva upruta d'ate amilva. Shaul held, halachically speaking, that a loan and a pruta, da'ate amilve, the person's mind is on the pruta, is on the loan, sorry. But David saval milval pruta da'ate apruta. But David held that when there's a loan and a pruta, the person's mind is on the pruta. What are we talking about here? We're talking about a halachic difference of opinion. Shaul owed David, let's say, I know, $100,000 worth of wealth at least. Right? If he promised him wealth, we're talking about, you know, whoever kills Goliath is going to be made wealthy by the king. Right? You're expecting a sizable sum. Doesn't say what it is, but you expect a sizable sum.
A million shekels.
So now we've learned that that million shekel loan by itself is not enough to affect a marriage, because you can't affect a marriage on the back of a cancellation of a debt. It's not good value. So now we've got that debt, which is still stands, it hasn't been paid off. And it didn't work for Merab. But now, in the case of Michal, we've got that debt plus 100 foreskins, which we're saying has a value of a pruta. So now you've got a million shekel, which is not good consideration, plus a pruta. A pruta by itself If you forgot the million shekel and just had a pruta, for sure everyone agrees a pruta would be enough. You only need to marry on a pruta. Everyone agrees with that. But now you've got a million loan and a pruta. There's now an argument. Why? Because Shaul holds that where you have a loan of a sizable sum and a pruta, and you use that to exchange for a marriage, then the person's mind is on the loan. He's not thinking about the pruta. He's thinking about the loan. You're right, there's a pruta there as well. I'm not thinking about that. And therefore, Shaul says that wasn't valid consideration either. Because you weren't considering, it wasn't even in your mind to think about that little pruta. When you said it, your mind was on the big million-dollar shekel loan, and you were mistaken because that doesn't work.
But couldn't you say that now Saul is lying because he said first stipulation was kill Goliath?
Yes.
David did that. Second stipulation after that was, give me 100 foreskins from Palestinians.
Yes.
And he did that.
Yes.
If he keeps on going and going and going,
yes,
David's going to do whatever Saul wants, and Saul will still give it the same garbage.
Could be. But here, first of all, we only have two occasions. After this, that was it. You only had two daughters. So there wasn't any more. But you can say, you're right, he was trying to get on. You could say that. But the truth is, it's still a halachic question. He may have fooled him halachically, but the question is, halachically, was he correct? By saying, give me a pruta, 100 foreskins, whatever it is, a pruta, and by maintaining the loan that was still in existence, did that nullify, cancel out the pruta because of the size of the loan compared to the pruta? The pruta by itself would have been enough, but now I'm dangling this loan in your face. So you're considering the loan, you're thinking about the loan, you're not thinking about the pruta. So according to Shaul, it's not a valid marriage either. Halachically.
What could have David done? Assist upon payment immediately? And with that payment?
Well, so David, so we're going to see what David savar, David held, milva pruta, datea pruta, that when you have the case of a loan, a large loan, and a pruta, to affect a marriage, the person's mind is on the pruta because he knows that's the bit that's going to affect the marriage. He's not thinking about the million shekel. He's thinking about the pruta. So David held it was valid. So David didn't need to change anything. He said, fine, it's fine with me. Let's go ahead with this. According to me, that's a valid halachically. I'm done here. Right? I'm good. This is marriage. I've got no problems. You might have a problem. So it was machloket. Tov, the Ibai Tema, alternatively you can say the Kule Alma Milva Puta and the Ateya Puta. Or alternatively you could look at it a different way. So that's not exactly what happened, but what happened? What was the argument between Shaul and David? It wasn't, they all agreed that if you have a loan and a pruta, the Ateya Puta, everyone agrees in the second version. Everyone agrees that if you got a loan for a million shekel, which is no good, doesn't help you get married because you can't marry on the back of a loan, and you've got a pruta, that everyone considers that the pruta is still valid currency and it's good enough to affect the marriage. Doesn't matter, no one's thinking about the loan. So now what's the argument? Shaul savar lo hazu velo midei. Shaul thought, or Shaul held, that it's not, that they weren't suitable for anything. But David savu savar chazu le clave v'shunrei. David held that they were suitable for cats and dogs.
Oh, well, yes.
Now we're talking about the value of the foreskins. Shaul said, you know what, you're right. If those foreskins were actually worth a pruta, you would have married Michal validly. But they're not worth a pruta, right? They're a waste of space, right? They have no value at all. You can't do anything with them. No one's going to buy them. Not even for a pruta. And David said, no. There's at least a pruta's worth of cat food in there. Right? And so that was the argument. Whether or not it actually had value, it was worth a pruta.
I mean, that could feed 10 cats.
Maybe. Don't know. Tov, okay. So that was that. the two marriages. So what happened? So we know that Shaul also gave Michal away. Shaul didn't consider that Michal was married either to David. And he gave Michal to Palti ben Laish as his wife. Palti ben Laish was was a big tzaddik, and he refused to sleep with Michal. He put a knife, a big sword, in the bed between them, famously, because he knew that she was really married to David. Anyway, back to Agmar. But Rabbi Yossi, what does Rabbi Yossi do high with the verse Tana et Ishti et Michal, my Darishbe? Rabbi Yossi, who we learned earlier, held that actually he did marry both. Rabbi Yossi said he married Meirav and Michal. He married Meirav first, then afterwards he married Michal, after Meirav died. So according to Rabbi Yossi, he was married to both of them at some point. So why do we have a verse then that says, give me my wife Michal? If Meirav was also his wife, why does the verse say, give me my wife Michal? What does Rabbi Yossi do with that verse? Answer, Rabbi Yossi Latame. Rabbi Yossi follows his own reasoning. The Tanya, like it's taught in a brighter, Rabbi Yossi Hayadoresh Mikraot Ma'uravin. Rabbi Yossi would expound these mixed up verses. So let's see what the mixed up verses are that Rabbi Yossi explains. So again, in the Sefer of Shmuel, it's written like this. Ketiv v'yikach ha-melech et shnei b'nei Yoritzpa bat aya asher yalda la-shaul et harmonei v'et mefiboshet. So the king, meaning David, took the two sons of Ritzpah, who was the daughter of Aya, that she bore to Shaul, Armoni and Mephibosheth. V'et chameshet b'nei Michal, and the five sons of Michal, asher yaldal la'Adriel ha'machalti, the five sons of Michal that she bore to Adriel. Right? Which is strange, because we said that Meirav was given to Adriel, not Michal. Michal was given to Palti ben Laish. So why is the verse over here saying that Michal bore sons to Adriel? She wasn't married to him. What's going on? So the Gemara has to explain what's going on. Bechila Adriel mit natna. Was she given to Adriel? No. Ba'alo le Palti ben Laish natna. She was given to Palti ben Laish. Dichtiv, like it says in the pasuk. Shaul Natanet Michal Bito. Shaul gave his daughter Michal, Eshet David, the wife of David, the Palti Ben Laish. The Palti Ben Laish. Ella, rather, why does it say that Michal bore children to Adriel? Ella Makish Kiddushei Meirav LaAdriel, the Kiddushei Michal LaPalti. Rather, the marriage of Meirav to Adriel was compared to the marriage of Michal to Palti. How? Ma kiddushei Michal le Palti ba'aveira, just like the marriage of Michal to Palti was an aveira, was a sin, because she was already married to David. Af kiddushei Meirav le Adriel ba'aveira, so too the marriage of Meirav to Adriel was also a sin, because she was also married to David. So according to the first opinion of Rabbi Yossi, who says he actually did marry both sisters, so he takes these pasukim to show that there is a comparison between the two marriages. What's the comparison? The comparison is that they were both against the halakha. They both, Shaul made a mistake in both of them when he gave away his daughters to two different men, because both of them were actually married to King David. Okay? Make sense? Questions, comments, answers, on a postcard. Okay. Now, Rabbi Yeshua ben Korba.
What does Rashi say?
What does Rashi say? He says a few things, but I think which strikes me as terribly exciting. Shalom, Rav Yosef. Okay, Tov, let's continue a little bit more. Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, Nami. Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha also, what about him? What does he say? How does he understand the fact that we just said that these two pasukim show that the marriage of Merav to Adriel was like the marriage of Michal to Palti ben Laish, right? But according to Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, he wouldn't make that same comparison, because Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha says that David didn't marry both Merav and Michal. Right? He only married Michal. The marriage to Merav was a ta'ut, was a mistake, wasn't a true marriage. So we learn that the Gemara has now said that, according to the explanation of Rabbi Yossi, that you compare the two marriages and say this marriage is like that marriage, but you can't compare them according to Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, because one of them never took place. So what does he do? So his answer is like this. Hagativ et chamishei b'nei Michal. But Shaul, what does he do with this pasuk, the five sons of Michal, the daughter of Shaul? Amalacha, so his answer is like this. Amalacha Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua would answer like this. V'chi Michal yelda. Did Michal really bear five children to Adriel? No, of course not. She was married to Palti ben Laish, or to David, but she certainly wasn't married to Adriel. So why does the pasuk say that she was married? She bore children to Adriel. Halom Merav Yelda. Merav actually bore the children to Adriel. So why did it say Michal did? Answer: Merav Yelda or Michal Gidla. Merav bore them, right? They were born to Merav. But Michal Gidla, Michal grew them up, raised them. The Fichach Nikraushma. Therefore, they're called on her name. L'medcha Shekon HaMegadel Yatom B'toch Beito Ma'ale Alav HaKatov Ke'ilu Yaldo. To teach you that whoever raises orphans in his home, it's as if he's regarded as if he fathered them himself. Right, so the pasuk says that they were born to Michal. Actually, they were born to Merav. So why does the pasuk say they were born to Michal? Because to teach you that even though they weren't born to Michal, the fact that she raised them, it's considered as if she bore them. Top. We'll stop there. Thank you.